Good evening, dear listeners. Welcome to Business and Economic Segment with me, David Shombe, and we are very happy to be here. It's 4 minutes past the hour of six, and we understand that some of you are preparing to go and vote tomorrow, especially when it comes to regional and local authority elections. Make sure that you have your cards, make sure that you follow the rules, and also make sure that you are on time, because democracy, when they say it's government of the people, by the people, and for the people, you need to make that democratic choice. And everybody has one vote, one man, one vote. And now is everybody's, every person's vote. But yeah, as it has always been the case, this is a platform. We discuss global affairs. We discuss trade issues. We discuss issues of governance. And also we discuss developmental affairs, either from a continental point of view, either is from, regional. And also we look at issues of, domestic affairs. And yeah, there's an ongoing summit of, I think it's concluding today, of AU-EU summit, which has to look at security, trade, and sustainable development. And we're going to look at how experienced players in global diplomacy do their things, and to see and also ask questions to say, in all this whole game, what is Africa has? And in all this game, who is going to benefit? And we are going to listen to some of the most professional, politician and diplomats at the highest level who know how to represent their continents and also how to push for their interests. And remember, in the world of multilateralism, you have a right and a choice to align with everybody as long as you have a common, interest, particularly in terms of trade. Remember, just a few months, African head of state were coming from, Japan, from TICAD, with 5.5 billion loans, pledged by, Japan. And also, recently, concluded also, G20. And also, there is also a discussion at, COP30 there, different agreements, different, time. But the question has always been to say, Africa is a continent which has the youngest population, a continent which has 30% of global minerals. What is in for Africa? And also, what are these money that Africa is getting going to use them? And I was reading on some of our social media platform, and somebody saying 50% of that money, particularly from EU, will go to some people's pocket. But how are we making sure that the system and also the institutions that we have in Africa are able to assist us in pushing developmental affairs? But before we go there, we are looking at financial inclusion, especially with City of Windhoek, and also Standard Bank agreement that happened today. And I think it's also part of financial inclusion to look at why not everybody to follow and do such, and also to say how can we improve, especially in the lives of the people. Either is to get, easy and also understandable financial assets. Either is to get easy and also understandable financial training. And also to look at what can you use, and also how can institutions learn from this. And it was indicated that today Standard Bank and also Standard Bank Namibia and City of Windhoek signed a financial agreement, especially in line with assistance in terms of financial training, and also preferential access to finance, and also other assets, personal loans too, and also vehicle, financial assistance. And looking at that, I got into the conversation with Miss Van der Melve, head of transaction at Standard Bank, just to engage on this matter. And also to see, when you are assisting an institution, at what level, which employees, who is getting preference, even if a cleaner or a security, at what level. But also to look at Bank of Namibia financial sector transformation strategy, to say what is the role of private banking sector in terms of financial sector transformation strategy as Namibia is striving by 2035 there, that around 90% of Namibians have access to formal financial services, and what are the tools and mechanism need to be used. So before we go to the main conversation for today, which is actually the conversation of AU-EU, let us look at this news of Standard Bank and move forward.
Yes, we are continuing with business and economic segment, and today we went to Standard Bank Namibia, where there was an agreement between Standard Bank and also City of Windhoek. But for us to unpack this and also to get the story out there, I'm in contact with Karen van der Merwe, just to introduce herself and also what is the content of this agreement, what is the benefit of this agreement, and also what does it mean, especially when it's coming to housing and also development in the City of Windhoek. Karen van der Merwe, thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining us, business and economic segment. How are you doing?
Hi, David. I'm doing very well, and it's a great honor to talk to you today.
Yeah.
So the agreement we just signed with the City of Windhoek entails that we provide solutions to all levels of staff within the City of Windhoek, pertaining to home loans, personal loans, and also vehicle and asset finance, which means we would assist the staff at preferential rates to acquire what they need to acquire to enhance their lifestyle. What we will also do is we will be hosting financial fitness academies to empower the staff to budget better and do financial planning a lot better, to also uplift people around how you should go around looking at your finances. So every level of staff in the City of Windhoek will be benefited and will be empowered to have a house, have a car, and a personal loan which can make you do anything.
Oh, okay. So how long is this agreement? And maybe you can give us percentage and also numbers to what rate somebody can also take a loan. And also, is it all City of Windhoek employees? And for how long is this agreement going to be?
So the agreement gets renewed on a 3-yearly basis, and it's applicable to anyone who works for the City of Windhoek on a full-time basis. I do not have the rates with me, and it is actually bespoke to every employer that we engage on in such an agreement. We have many such agreements with employers. So if there are any employers out there who really want their employees to benefit and improve their lives, they are very welcome to reach out to us, and we will talk to them about the solution.
Yeah, maybe what other programs Standard Bank is running, especially when we want to improve the lifestyle of, not only City of Windhoek, but also Odira in Namibia, especially giving special treatment. We understand there is problems of housing in Windhoek, and the population of Windhoek is increasing every year with 3%, and housing is a main issue. What other programs apart from this one, and also what is the long term in terms of supporting other institutions also when it comes to housing and also home loans?
So we do employee value banking with any employer that want to engage with us. So wherever you are in the economy, we are represented across the country. It's not just localized to Windhoek. We do this everywhere. And if I look at other housing programs, so we have our normal home loan schemes that we all know, traditional home loans. But we also have a CSI initiative called Buy a Brick, where we partner with the shack dwellers to assist. We raise funds, and we contribute funds as a bank, but we also raise funds as individuals within the bank. We run all sorts of campaigns and initiatives to get money together to really try and eradicate this housing problem we have by building very low-cost housing, but in conjunction with the Shack Dwellers Association in areas where we get land, and then improve the lives of people through that way.
Maybe just the last thing, especially regarding financial inclusion. There has been an ongoing discussion. We have seen Bank of Namibia brought about financial sector transformation strategy, and at the center of that, there is an aspect
including people financially with that product. Additionally, we are also on the journey with Bank of Namibia for the interoperable payment platform that they are busy crafting to ensure that we are one of the first people that are there to ensure cheaper and more accessible banking to everyone in the country.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us at this program, and thank you for your time.
Thanks, David.
Yes, that was Ms. Van der Merwe from Standard Bank, and also to look at the city. But our main concern has always been to say what will happen, especially to an ordinary worker, an ordinary employee, and also how is the life going to be changed, particularly to the unbanked, because every situation always been asking to say, yes, those who are secured is good, but what will happen? What is a direct investment to the unbanked? And also, what is a direct investment also to those who are not able to be within any category? Because you know that in Namibia, you can find a person who does not fit in any category. A person is not a graduate. A person did not even reach grade 10. A person is, did not get an opportunity to go to former, school. A person did not also get an opportunity to get, a better job. Even, has, that required quality and capacity to be employed at a long-term level. But in that sector, you can also ask yourself a question to say, when you speak about informal sector, what other alternative things need to be done? But looking at Bank of Namibia financial sector transformation strategy, I think it's also very important also to look at whose role, what sector should play at different roles, particularly when it's coming to financial inclusion. While we are there, there is an ongoing, about to be concluded, EU-AU 7th summit that look at aspect of security, peace, stability, and also economic development. But I want you to listen to how this, you know, diplomatic meeting is going. And also I want you to listen to some of the key players in that, you know, continental agenda, and to see when you speak about the relationship between EU and Africa, what does it mean? When you speak about investment in Africa, what does it mean? What is that that EU want, and that is what is that that Africa want? Are we operating at the highest level, or there is somebody who is being played, or are we respecting each other? Is it mutual beneficial relation, or there is a game behind? And also to look at what are the key development which have happened, and also and speak about programs and praise, such as from EU Gateway, you know, framework, especially when there's a praise to say by 2027, there will be around 150 billion EU investment in Africa. And it's not US dollar, it's euros. It's euros. And also to see how is this going to be utilized, particularly when it's coming to development, because it's not new. It's not new. But Africa has been getting assistance, and Africa have been in trade relation. And the question you're asking yourself is that that of who we are sending to represent us, are they good at that game of trade? Are they good at that game of international relations? Or we are always losing, or we are at a level where things are going to turn out the right way. But before we go to that discussion, it's also very important also to understand that in this world we are living, there is nothing for free. For you to eat, you need to work, and also for you to achieve anything, you need to make sure that you work, and don't say somebody or institution can just come to Africa just to assist you because you are suffering. People also have their sisters, but there must be exchange to say, I give you this, then that is also what I'm getting from you, and that is the relationship that we are talking about. I want you to listen to the very short speech of the chairperson of the African Union Commission, that is Mahmoud Ali Yusuf, what he has to say at that summit. And I also want to want you to listen after this conversation. Then we'll also look at what EU has to say and also see where we are standing. We can compare issues and also see where we are standing as a continent. And you can also incorporate Namibia into this conversation.
O centro do crescimento global
and natural resources as abundant as never before. Our continent is making progress to be a key player in the different stages of the global value chain. Our role as raw material supplier only will come to an end soon. Therefore, we are calling for a more balanced trade partnerships. I'm pleading for European investments in the transformation process of our minerals on the continent. I'm calling for the lifting of any tariff or non-tariff barrier hampering the access of African products to the European market. I'm finally calling for a stronger and more viable multilateralism based on equality, respect for all nations, and advancing the common vital global interest. Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, may this Luanda Summit enables us to achieve our shared vision for peace, progress, and prosperity for our peoples across the two continents. We can make this journey together for the sake of uplifting our shared humanity over selfishness and narrow-minded protectionism. I thank you. Our shared humanity over selfishness and narrow-minded protectionism. I thank you. Respect for all nations and advancing the common vital global interest. Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, may this Luanda Summit enables us to achieve our shared vision for peace, progress, and prosperity for our peoples across the two continents. We can make this journey together for the sake of uplifting our shared humanity over selfishness and narrow-minded protectionism.
It's a deep diplomatic language, especially from AU Commission Chairperson, especially when he stated to say there must be respect of shared vision over selfishness and also narrow-minded protectionism, to say and this is also a direct message, and I don't want to interpret it for you. But when you speak about narrow-minded protectionism, it's those institutions or those countries who are protecting themselves, they are protecting their market, and also make it difficult for those who need assistance. But it's also something that you can take from the speech of AU Chairperson, especially when he stated to say the aspect of Africa to continue sending or to continue exporting raw materials is coming to an end. The aspect of Africa to continue sending raw materials outside Africa is about to come to an end. But that will benefit Africa more. But what is also stated in that communication is that Africa needs AU to assist her to make sure that they are independent economically so that they can trade again. And in simple terms, assist Africa to make sure that they build industry that add value, so that when it comes to value addition, then Africa can trade, because there is no balance. Because for the past 25 years, there is no balance of trade. If you are still selling raw materials, if you are still importing toothpicks, what have we learned from your trading partner? But I also want you to listen, because in the space of diplomacy, you have those trained diplomats who understand, can read the situation, and can also position themselves. And when I listen to the very beautiful speech of the president of EU, then you understand that we are a bit far, because they understand what they want, and they also understand what Africa wants. And the communication part, you can see this is an experienced diplomat. And the president of EU Commission, that is Madame Ursula Gertrude von der Leyen. It's one of the most experienced diplomat I've ever seen. And I want you to listen to her speech. And when you are listening to her speech, read between the lines, because diplomats, they don't speak directly. Read between the lines, especially when EU is positioned as number one trading partner of Africa, where one third of Africa export is going to EU. And also listen to how she compare EU with other investors in Africa. And you also ask yourself to say, if you are an African or if you are a president of a state in Africa, or you are the chairperson of African Union Commission, you do not, it's very difficult to see which one is on my side and who I should do business with. But what is very interesting is also that there is also a freedom of multilateralism to say you can also form partnership and align with almost anybody. But listen to this speech and listen very careful to say what is that Africa is giving out and what is that Africa is getting. And this is a speech by EU Commission President. And yeah.
President Lorenzo, President Costa, Chairperson Yusuf, fellow leaders, presidents, prime ministers, ladies and gentlemen. The last time we met in this format was mid-February 2022, just after a global pandemic and just before the war returned to Europe and before global politics became much more competitive and transactional. Since then, our world has changed profoundly. Global trade is more politicized than ever. Tariffs and trade barriers are being wielded aggressively. Export controls have become a tool to damage competitors and extract concessions. Global overcapacity in certain strategic fields has reached an all-time high. This is harming industries on both our continents with consequences felt deep inside our societies. In this new reality, Africa and Europe are called to answer the very same questions. How can we create good jobs for our people? How can we deliver on the aspiration of our youth? How can we de-risk and diversify our economies? How can we break free from unsustainable dependencies while ensuring access to capital, resources, and technologies we need? Excellencies, fellow leaders, I believe that many of the answers lie in our partnership. In a more confrontational global economy, Africa and Europe need each other more than ever before. And this is what brings us here to Luanda. Today we can look back on the progress achieved since our last summit, but more importantly, we will look forward to new opportunities to work together. As old friends, but also as trading partners, investment partners, business partners, we want Africa and Europe to be partners of choice. Excellencies, fellow leaders, in a world of trade conflicts, a closer partnership between us begins with trade itself. Europe is already your first trading partner by far. One third of Africa's total trade is with Europe. And Africa exports to Europe more than twice as much as to China, for example. Most of our trade has been duty-free and quota-free already for decades, thanks to our free trade deals and preference schemes. But I see room to expand our trade relationship even further. Right across the continent, we are building new infrastructure together to connect Africa and Europe. from ports to pipelines, the list is long. But take the Lobito Corridor. You all know this ambitious project to bring critical minerals from Zambia and DRC to global markets. But it is much more than that. As we launched the corridor, we also started working with farmers right here in Angola. European companies provided training. They helped local companies align with European standards and expand their export capacity. And this week we can celebrate that the very first shipment of Angolan avocados will leave Lobito bound to Europe. This is how we can make global trade a driver of local growth. And while we connect Africa to global markets, we are also supporting trade within your continent. I think this is the best way for African companies to scale up and prepare for global competition. With this summit, we are announcing more support to the African continental free trade area. And the message is clear. Even and especially in these times of global tensions, we believe in the power of trade because it delivers for our people and it delivers for our economies. Excellencies, fellow leaders, together with trade comes investment. And this is the second point I would like to address. At our summit 3 years ago, I presented our new Global Gateway Agenda, and you just referred to it. And in these 3 years, you have all seen what Global Gateway stands for. It is more than an investment and infrastructure development program. It invests in local jobs and local value chains. And this is what makes it unique in the global investment landscape. Other investors might follow a different playbook by building factories, whether in Africa or in Europe, but staff them with foreign workers. They drill, they mine, and they take the profits away. They often leave a legacy of unsustainable debts. This is not Europe's model. When we invest in the local processing of raw materials in Namibia or Zambia, when we build pharmaceutical industries from Senegal to Rwanda, when we bring data cables to the Maghreb and East Africa, these investments are truly in our mutual interest. They enable to move higher up the global value chain. They create new jobs for African youth, new skills for researchers, new businesses opportunities for African companies. And while doing so, we also create new markets for European companies and strengthen our European supply chain. So a true win-win situation. When we launch Global Gateway, we aim to invest $150 billion in Africa by 2027. So far, we have already mobilized more than 120 billion euro, so we are well on track to meet our target. And at a time when major investors are rethinking their global engagement, Europe is very clear our commitment to Africa is here to stay. And this leads me to my third and final point, about one sector where it is particularly urgent to scale up investment. The global clean transition is now in full swing. Last year, over 90% of new energy capacity installed worldwide was renewable. Solar and wind have replaced coal as the leading source of electricity worldwide. But out of $2 trillion invested in clean energy globally in 2024, only 2% came to Africa.
Yeah, that is the president of EU, especially speaking in Angola, Rwanda, to say African Union or Africa needs, or Africa and Europe needs each other. ever than before. They need each other more than before. And that is a conversation that we need to look at. But for now, let us look at a short commercial break. Then we can interpret that, you know, conversation, and also to communicate.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and
staff. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngejefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi finawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onmora esatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa mora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu oma felane Eagle FM the
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in...
Hello?
Good evening, Mr. Shombe.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Thank you very much. Let me thank God for...
for going through.
For going through.
Okay. Especially BS. I know.
Yeah, no. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I'm a team counselor.
Yeah,
so I hope if I go wrong, please correct me so that I don't burden you.
I'm also learning from you. I'm also learning from you. Everybody is learning.
So you are good.
Yeah.
So, yes, thank you very much. Maybe I start with the theme of the lesson 3 concluded leadership 20 G20 summit. And because we have heard now that...
Because remember, there are two summits, you know, after diplomats leave South Africa, they just cross over Namibia, now they are in Angola with...
I heard it from the minister in the president's office.
Okay.
South Africa.
Okay.
That how they were lining up to their calendars and all these other things.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying there is that the theme, solidarity, equality, and sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
And these are concepts that I'm hearing now, cropping up again, because I also listened to the European, the president who was talking now.
Yeah, he's the president of EU. And he's a very experienced diplomat. Are you not hearing what he's saying?
No, I am presenting in South Africa.
Is somebody that you cannot say no to? No, she's very experienced.
Yeah, that commitment.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah.
But then, in terms of debt restructuring and all these other trade barriers that are there, we all know very well that is true. So we are even warned that we need to prepare. For that competition. But no, we must prepare for the perfect competition. We all know very well that in our own domestic here, like you said, David, that yes, we need to, what we are learning, we bring them to our own situation at home.
Yeah.
But we know very well that I understand the investment and all these $1 trillion and things like that. And for us, Africa, as a community, as you know, we need to make sure that we assist ourselves here. So what about our informal economy?
And the other thing which I have seen, because when you read that speech, look at the arrangement of the speech, because first it's presenting to you what Africa needs, and also to say we are also at the same time creating the market for Europe and also other things. But it's a very good diplomat. But the question is always as to say, is that a win-win? Are we going to get something if we have already been together for 25 years after colonialism? Are we winning?
So, you see, in our own case,
yeah,
you see now they are saying that they have already mobilized. In fact, they are envisioned to mobilize 140 billion in 2027.
Yeah.
Already, they have already started mobilization of the fund. Over 100 billion.
That is a good, it's a good news. Yeah.
For us now, we also need to mobilize our own cell, our own, for our own resources that we have. If we also have a huge number of youth, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who need to get employment.
Yeah.
And this is the embassy. And it's also making sure that in terms of capacity building, I love the way you team up with this Standard Bank and the City of Windhoek. Those are kind of collaboration. And it's that we are only going to win. He said we are only going to win if we partner up.
But you know, one thing I know and I respect about EU is that they have a standard. If they give you money, there is what is expected from you. You have to abide by their direction. They have a standard and they cannot just fund you and you give them receipts written by hands. You find yourself in trouble. And also to say, is that fund directed or guided? Because you cannot come. And it's not right also, and it's also for our diplomats to protect us, because you cannot come and fund a project that is not my priority. To say my main priority, for example, is I want to deal with youth unemployment. Then you are coming here and you are funding a different project. You see what I mean?
So you see, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You also need to scrutinize.
No. It's those who represent, it's those who sit there to represent us also. To say, okay, we understand you, but are you focusing on our priorities to say?
Yes, the priority in this case.
Yeah.
What I'm hearing and what I've heard and what I'm reading now, what they are busy doing there. The priority is almost the needs that we have here, our own here, is similar to that. So, of course, you need to be accountable for the funds that is coming in your pocket. Whether it's coming from the domestic, mobilized within the domestic market or outside. And our concern is that we should not be exporting this raw material, but we should be exporting a solution, because we have got solution. Informatical, but then in conclusion, what are you asking? The question that you have asked is very, very crucial.
Yeah.
That we just have, if it, they have to monitor their money, where it's used. Because when the sun comes, it comes for different purposes. So now the gender issues, they are coming in, diversification of economic activities there, whatever is there. It's all up to us now to identify the sector, the economic sector that have got so, the potential.
Okay.
To really absorb youth, maybe in agriculture or whatever. So in conclusion, but you must clean up the conflict.
No, that is where I wanted to go, because she did not speak about war, conflict, and democratic instability. Their focus is trading, and it's really not a good thing.
She mentioned of those layers who are there.
Yeah,
and but, you know that even in the security and all this peace and things that we are talking about, of course, in your own side there, you know, when it comes to the cyber security that we're talking about, the informal laws and all this trading and things like that, you need to shape up quickly, so our own informal economic mentors and whatever, all those ones, the hookers and all these things, they are part of the ecosystem.
Yes, thank
you. You cannot formulate up laws and you just come and say, yes, City of Windhoek, you are here, you have built up the partnership, but we are still talking about trade barriers within our own system here.
Indeed, indeed.
Thank you very much.
All right. Yeah, that is what's happening. To say, EU have been our trading partner for the past 25 years. And one of the things that is also stated there is also that say EU is busy also, helping local businesses and also shaping up of local companies so that they can be competitive in a global market. But when you also be tempted to ask questions to say, okay, if that is the project, who is behind, or why are we fighting each other with the red line? As EU has been used in a lot of debates, but why are we fighting each other in the red line issue? If what is necessary is to make sure that everyone is ready for international market. And also, it's also quite need a deep analysis to say, at the same time, we're also helping you to trade within, but you also need to trade with us. It's quite complicated. And when you also analyze that speech, when you read between the lines, and you also understand it very well, it's also to say, EU investment is not like other investors who come to Africa and destroy mines and also come with their workers and they leave. That is a diplomatic campaign. It's good for EU, but is it good for Africa? What choice is Africa going to make? What power do we have apart from resources? Are we using our resources as a bargaining power? Because that's the only thing that we have. So now I want you to listen to what the SG of UN has to say, because he's very honest and brutally honest about the challenges, particularly what need to be done, and also look at how we should move. And also, when you look at the two continents, because what is stated is that assisting Africa to develop is one way to redress past injustice. And in the word of diplomacy, that is colonialism. To say, to redress past injustice, you must be honest and assist Africa to develop so that it can also compete at the global stage. That is what the UNSJ has to say. Because with him, he can see through the lines, because continental institutions, that is where he plays a role as a head of, or an administrator of United Nations. So let us look at what SG Antonio Guterres has to say.
Against the risks of division of the world into two blocks, led by two big powers, we need an interconnected multipolarity with an inclusive network of intense relations on trade, development, financial institutions, and with increasing political coordination. But multipolarity in itself is not a guarantee of peace and prosperity. Europe was multipolar in 1914, but in the absence of strong multilateral governance, the result was war. Today's multipolarity, to be successful, also needs strong multilateral institutions and dynamics as a condition for stability and equilibrium. The partnership between the AU and the EU, two multilateral organizations, and more broadly, the partnership between Europe and Africa, are well placed to be a central axis of a new multipolar world. The emerging reality offers an opportunity to rectify historic injustices and usher in a fairer, more equal system for countries long excluded from global decision-making. I wish to address three areas where cooperation between your two continents can play a decisive role in guiding this new reality. First, sustainable development. Today's global financial architecture is both unfair and ineffective. It favors already wealthy nations. We must reform it for everyone's benefit. And this means ending the crushing debt cycle, tripling the lending capacity of multilateral development banks, and giving developing countries, many of them in Africa, greater participation and influence in the global financial institutions as part of the reform of the international financial architecture to adapt it to today's world. In Sevilla this year, the international community agreed on comprehensive steps to advance these goals. The African Union's Agenda 2063 and the United Nations 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development also point that way. Together, you can end the injustices of poverty,
address the root causes of migration and displacement, and unleash the unmatched economic potential of these continents. Second, climate action. Africa is rich in sun, wind, and critical minerals, and demand to those critical minerals is set to triple by 2030, driven by the shift towards clean energy. That must be an opportunity to resurrect the old models of resource exploitation and replace them with high value-added processing and production in the countries of origin. With the right training and financing, the renewables revolution can empower all of Africa, but only if international cooperation enables a just transition away from fossil fuels, including the electrification of the continent. To allow for a just transition, we need developed countries to keep their promises and engage all their partners, to double adaptation finance this year, and to pursue all efforts to triple it by 2035, and to make the Baku COP decisions a reality. Africa has the resources and a dynamic young workforce. Europe has the capital and the technological know-how. Climate action is a duty, but between you both, it is an opportunity. Third, we come to peace. The Russian invasion of Ukraine, Europe's worst conflict in a generation, unleashed terrible suffering for civilians and deep disruptions in the global economy. The death and destruction in Gaza will be remembered as our bigger failure of humanity. And in Sudan, South Sudan, Somalia, Libya, Mali, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo, countless others endure bloodshed and pain. But there is a way forward. The Pact for the Future, adopted last year, calls for permanent seats for Africa on the United Nations Security Council to rectify a deep historic injustice and strengthen the Council's ability to deliver peace across the globe. I repeat my call for sustainable, flexible, and predictable funding for African Union-led peace operations as endorsed by Security Council Resolution 2719. And I commend the European Union for their direct engagement and for advocating these over the past decades. Excellencies, the solutions to these challenges lie in multilateralism, including strong regional and global institutions. Together, as it was mentioned, the EU and the EU make up 40% of UN member states. You have the power to uphold the charter, broker agreements, and steer the world towards a more stable, more inclusive reality, where international law prevails and injustices and inequalities are progressively eliminated. Out of the turbulence of today, you can craft a new era of hope for unity, for equality, and for peace. I thank you. Muito obrigado.
Yeah, that is Antonio Guterres. And one thing that also need to look at is that who is on our side, and also who is going to save us. Because when you look at the UN member state, as he stated, to say EU and Africa make 40% of UN member state, and when you want to broke decisions, you can have a very strong influence, particularly when it's coming to financial institutions. Then maybe the question that you're asking yourself is to say, what is that new that Africa is going to do from here moving forward? What is the differentiating factor between meetings held AU-EU those years and of the one for now? What is the different implementation mechanism? Why at the center of discussion, why at the center of an opening statement, EU did not mention about peace and security? Why is it like that? Because as we are speaking now, peace and security is a main threat in Africa. Then you have poverty, inequality, unemployment, and a lot of challenges. But peace and security. How many governments are run by military? And was it a choice? And how many are elected and behave differently? And what is the safety of women and children in Africa? And why can't that be the point of departure in any discussion to say, let us invest in peace, security, and also social protection? Then we can look at trade. Because you can bring a lot of billions and billions in Namibia, for example. But if you did not restructure the system, it's only 10% of the people who are going to benefit. And the rest, life will continue. Imagine somebody who is at deep down the village. I don't want to use Okongo. Deep down the village in Katima, in Tses, and just hearing about, no, there is 20 million investment in water planning by EU last year. There is also investment in water aquifer. Does that really change anything to an ordinary person who is deep down that village? I don't think so, because we need to look at ourselves also to see. There's a lot of money. It's just a transition mechanism. And they used to talk about Robito Corridor. The Robito Corridor is a trading route from Robito Port railways to DRC to get minerals. But did the EU speak about value addition and also trading of minerals at equal rate? I mean, at a global standard. Did they speak about that? Those are the questions that we need to ask ourselves to say, where do we meet? Because you cannot live without partners. But how sharp, how fast are those who are at the forefront of Africa trade negotiations? We have around 2 minutes. You can still engage us at 083-288-401, 083-288-401. Good evening.
David, nobody's coming.
If nobody's coming, doesn't mean that nobody's listening.
No, listening and coming is different. But the issue, no, just a minute. The issue.
Okay, one minute, then we can give. Yeah.
Listen, the issue is that the scope is so broad.
Which scope?
The scope for example, the one that is taking place there in Angola. The one that took place during the leaders summit. So they started to some other conversation like social development, for example, before the 2 days of the head of state met.
Yeah.
So now when they started with all those social protection, the gender-based violence, all those areas, social development, housing, energy, all these things, just like it's coming up now. So I think it's for us now to now say, yes, on our own domestic here, which one is suitable for us, and start working on those ones and implement them and alleviate youth unemployment. Good.
Okay, thank you. We are coming to the end of our conversation. And I'm going to leave you in the good hands of Uncle Fly. And also Naruvanda to unpack the day. From me, David Shombe, bye-bye for now.